First case today is United States v. Cardenas. How do you pronounce it?
Cardenas, Your Honor.
Cardenas, okay. United States v. Cardenas. Appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Good morning. Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Tom Travers, and along with Major Kyle Sprague, I represent the appellant in this case, Sergeant Jesus Cardenas. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
In this case, the Army Court erred by allowing the government to elect its preferred offense of charges the government conceded were multiplicious. The Army Court's authority for allowing the government to make this election stems from the case United States v. Chura-Curry, which fashioned this remedy without citing to any law or tethering it to the Constitution, precedent, or the rules for courts-martial. In fact, Chura-Curry itself explains why the remedy of allowing the government to elect its preferred offense is incorrect in law. In that case, this court stated that the Double Jeopardy Clause of the Constitution requires that the lesser included of multiplicious offenses be dismissed before fashioning a remedy that allows the government to choose the opposite. Beyond Chura-Curry itself, this court's most recent precedent and the rules for courts martial also demonstrate that the proper remedy for multiplicious findings is the automatic dismissal of the lesser included offense, not a government election after the charge sheet has been out of its unfettered control since referral. This remedy grants the government a windfall to correct in its eyes a problem of its own creation. Even the other cases in which the Army Court cites for allowing the government their election undermines the efficacy of the remedy in Chura-Curry. In United States v. Palliger, the Army Court, or the Service Court, resolved only one of two sets of multiplicious offenses when it arrived to this court rather than remand it to the Service Court to make an election or for the government to make an election or to dismiss one itself. This court simply resolved the problem by dismissing the lesser included offense, recognizing that that was not only the correct remedy, but the required one. In United States v. Freelix Van, this court held that larceny was the lesser included offense of conduct on becoming an officer, citing United States v. DeLand. Notably, in U.S. v. DeLand, this court set aside violations of 120 and 134 as lesser included offenses of a 133. Most recently, in Ellispuru, 14 years after United States v. Chura-Curry, this court simply dismissed the lesser included of multiplicious offenses rather than allowing the government its election. In each case, this court used the elements test to determine what was, in fact, the lesser included offense. This test has been reaffirmed by this court as recently as last year in Rice, in Armstrong, Fossler, and Jones, and this elements test, combined with the rationale in Chura-Curry that dismissal of the lesser included offense is required by the Supreme Court's recent cases on the Double Jeopardy Clause of the Constitution, necessitates that this court in this case dismiss the Article 120 offense in favor of the greater offense, the Article
120. Well, in Ellispuru, that's not quite what happened. We didn't turn around and reverse course. Ellispuru, we held that he waived multiplicity.
Yes, Your Honor, but the court did not dispute the appellant's position that the wrongful section...
We didn't have to. He waived it.
Correct, Your Honor, and this court still recognized the proper remedy of dismissing the lesser-included offense of the wrongful sexual conduct.
Is it your position, basically, that Chura-Curry stands in the way of what you want and the only way you can get what you want is for us to overrule Chura-Curry and its progeny?
I'm asking this court to overrule the remedy in Chura-Curry, Your Honor, not the reasoning behind it. The remedy of allowing the government's election stands in stark contrast to this court's rationale that dismissal of the lesser-included offense is required by the Constitution, citing both Ball and Rutledge, both Supreme Court cases, Your Honor.
Did anyone try to take cert from Chura-Curry?
I honestly don't know that answer off the top of my head, Your Honor.
But in terms of Ball, the Supreme Court said that the remedy was to vacate one of the convictions. So why are you concerned about that one part of Chura-Curry where Chura-Curry seems to, the portion that you're citing seems to misstate what the Supreme Court actually did in Ball. Furthermore, it doesn't reflect what this court actually did in Cherokee.
I would agree, Your Honor, that Ball doesn't, and Rutledge don't expressly state that the lesser included offense must be dismissed, but this court's interpretation of those cases clearly states that that is what's required before fashioning a remedy without citing to any law or precedent stating that the government could choose the opposite. So to the extent that there's a conflict between the remedy in Cherokee and its rationale, Your Honor, I would urge this court to follow the rationale, which is actually a legitimate interpretation of Ball and Rutledge.
How is that a legitimate interpretation of Ball, where the Supreme Court said, quote, the remedy was, quote, to vacate one of the convictions? It didn't say anything about it needed to be the lesser included offense.
Your Honor, this court's precedent in Harwood and Rodriguez and Savage and Holt all recognized that at that time the appropriate remedy was to dismiss the lesser included offense. It is not a far leap at all for then Cherokee to cite Ball and Rutledge to say that, in fact, based on those precedents, that it is now required. And this court's interpretation is far from an outlier. The 3rd, 5th, and 10th Circuit Courts of Appeals, as well as some cases from the 4th, 6th, and 8th Circuits, all have interpreted Ball and Rutledge the same way, that the lesser included offense indeed must be vacated. Notably,
But then you've got the 7th Circuit with Greece saying that either conviction can be vacated.
Yes, Your Honor, but I will note that in the 7th Circuit specifically, or some cases out of the 7th, as well as the 2nd, 11th, and D.C., all recognize that dismissal is the proper remedy without requiring a remand. Notably, Your Honor, none of the circuits allow the government to elect its preferred offense. None of the circuits turn to the DOJ and ask them which offense they prefer on appeal.
Now, do you agree, though, that dismissal of either offense would cure the constitutional problem, the double jeopardy issue?
I agree that's what Ball and Rutledge say, Your Honor. However, this court's interpretation of both the Constitution and Ball and Rutledge suggests otherwise.
How could it not be a situation where the double jeopardy problem is solved by dismissal of one of them?
I agree, Your Honor, that would solve dismissing one would solve the problem of having multiple convictions for the same offense. However, I would urge this court to follow its own rationale in Cherokee that dismissal of the lesser included offense is required.
So in terms of any of these two offenses, the accused, now the appellant, was charged with the offenses, had the opportunity to defend against those offenses, was convicted of those offenses, they were found to be legally and factually sufficient. So how is it inherently unfair for either conviction to stand and for either conviction to be dismissed?
Your Honor, the multiplicious convictions, especially in this case, really never should have arrived to ACCA's court in their current state. Rule for Courts Martial 921C5 states that the fact finder can't even reach a conclusion on a lesser included offense until they reach a conclusion of the
greater offense. Well, that has to do with members' voting procedures, correct?
I believe it deals with fact finders reaching conclusions, Your Honor, not necessarily members.
Right. So this was past that point, so it's really not relevant.
It's not relevant in that we are past that point, Your Honor, but it's informative in that resolving this at the lowest level, that it's an operation of law, not a decision point for the government, for the lesser included offense not even to be considered by the fact finder. It stands to reason then on appeal, Your Honor, that the proper remedy, and in this case, based on this court's own rationale in Cherokee, the required one is to dismiss the lesser included offense.
Now, this is an argument in equity, it seems to be. And, of course, we're not a court of equity. You're saying, well, yeah, there's this precedent here, but it's not fair. Well, it may not be fair to your client, but that's hardly a reason for overruling a 20-year-old precedent.
Appellant's position, Your Honor, is that it's unfair not just based on my client's situation, but on this court's rationale that dismissal of the lesser included offense is required by the Double Jeopardy Clause. So it's not just that it's equitable in these circumstances so much an operation of law that this court has already decided.
Counsel, it seems that in most of these cases, the court said that the lesser included offense is required to be dismissed, that it was obvious that that was the offense that carried a lower sentence, and that if he'd given the government, that's the choice the government would have made. And, you know, I think in Ellis Puru and other cases, except for maybe not Chiricurri, it really wasn't an issue, that everybody sort of assumed that the lesser included offense would be discharged because it dismissed because it carried a lesser sentence. And in most of these cases, they don't really, the court doesn't really address the issue at all. I mean, it either gives the government the choice or it doesn't give the court, but doesn't give a rationale. Ellis Puru is almost different in the sense that it talks about the importance of allowing the government to plead in the alternative. And what would the proposal that you have here, what would your position do to the whole idea that the government is permitted and has always been permitted to charge in the alternative? Wouldn't it be highly risky? Because if they ended up getting a conviction on both, then the greater offense with the greater punishment would be thrown out.
Yes, Your Honor, that charging in the alternative is, or arguing against charging in the alternative is not appellant's position. Appellant's position is not that these offenses in this case, the 120 and the 93, were charged in the alternative as different theories, as if in some cases we see both bodily harm and incapable of consenting charged in a 120. What we have in this case is a distinct multiplicity problem from that, where based purely on an elements test, the 93 subsumed the elements of the 120. So appellant's position is that this problem is distinct from the exigent theories multiplicity issue. Secondly, Your Honor, to the first part of your question about whether there's been a case that the seemingly offense with the greater punishment was the one that went, and I would redirect Your Honor to U.S. v. DeLand, where they dismissed both a 120 and a 134 in favor of a 133. And in Freelich's Van, I believe it's the second to last paragraph, Your Honor, this court went into detail about how serious offenses that affect the chain of command, in that case 133, in this case 93, how serious they are. So appellant's position is that simply because the maximum punishment is lower in the 93 does not make it out of hand a less serious offense.
Counsel, I understood your argument earlier, and please correct me if I've misunderstood it. It's that one of the defects that you identify here is that interpretation of Chiricurri, which would allow the government to actually dismiss a charge, that the government, I believe you said, had unfettered discretion to dismiss the charge, even though they no longer had control of the charge sheet. Is that your view, or have I misstated it?
I believe that's an accurate statement based on my view, sir.
Now, in this case, the court below on page 7 of the unpublished opinion took a different approach. It had a situation in which the government requested the court to dismiss the appellant's conviction, and the lower court noted that our court had permitted the government to make an election, and then the court said, consistent with that guidance, we grant the government's request. That suggests to me that the court below understood at all times that it was in control and that it did not have to grant the government's request in that regard.
To the extent about, to amend my agreement with Your Honor's statement about it being the unfettered discretion of the government, when their government is granted this remedy, it is in their unfettered discretion. In regarding whether it's in the court's discretion, Your Honor, I would argue that if left up to the court is left to apply, the service court would be left to apply this court's precedent as well as be informed by the rules for courts martial, which all dictate the lesser included of the multiplicious offenses be dismissed.
Well, I understand that, but if the lower court could decide for a variety of reasons, could decide to reject the government's request. That's what I'm focusing on now, not whether any particular circumstance would require them to do so. But it appears from the text on page 7 of the opinion that the court approached this from the point of view that the government had to make a request and that it was up to the court below to grant that request, that they were not bound to do so.
Appellant's position is that the court was wrong for allowing the government to make the election at all, whether it was in the court's discretion to grant the government their election or whether the government could simply make it on their own. The appellant's position is that that authority of granting the government that ability is wrong on its face based on the rationale in Shurikuri, the rules for courts martial, and the court's interpretation of Supreme Court precedent. Your Honor, see my time has expired. I'm pending any further questions from the court.
Chief Judge, could I ask a question?
Judge Barnes.
Kevin Travers, you've indicated or at least argued that the fact that the included offense may have a greater maximum punishment assigned to it does not negate it from being a lesser offense, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then what would one use to determine what is a lesser offense? And can you just tell me what you use in determining in this case that sexual assault is a lesser offense of maltreatment?
Yes, Your Honor. Simply stated the elements test. This court has followed Blockberger and made it abundantly clear that the elements test is the appropriate test for determining what is and is not a lesser included offense. This court reaffirmed that as recently as last term.
But there has to be some meaning of lesser, doesn't there?
Yes, Your Honor. And in this case,
if something is a greater punishment or a more serious offense, I'm at odds with you about how you could determine that it's a lesser offense. That's where I'm stuck.
Yes, Your Honor. So there's a difference between lesser included and less serious. A lesser included offense is a legal term of art, and we determine that using the elements test, which we can do in this case by seeing that in the 93, and this is a point that the government conceded, Your Honor, by using the term sexual assault, they were intending to subsume the elements of an Article 120. So based on a pure elements test, that is the lesser included offense. And then we tie in this court's reasoning in Shurikuri that the lesser included must be dismissed based on the Constitution, and this court's analysis need be at an end. Rather, with a less serious offense, certainly when we're using that non-legal term, we can look at the max punishment chart, but in terms of determining what the max punishment chart says, this court has only taken that into account when determining whether a sentence need be reassessed, where a sentence reassessment need be done.
So are you conceding to me that sexual assault is a more serious offense?
I'm only conceding, Your Honor, that the maximum punishment chart has a greater maximum punishment than maltreatment.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Judge.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stewart.
Would you remove your mask, please? Thank you.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Major Craig Shapiro, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Wayne Williams, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the Army Court of Criminal Appeals decision because the service court followed this court's longstanding precedent permitting the government to elect which specification to keep when two specifications are found to be multiplicious on appeal. Appellant has not carried a substantial burden of persuasion under stare decisis to show why this court should overturn its precedent. Additionally, this rule makes sense because the government earned both convictions at trial, and the government must be able to represent the interests of the United States throughout the appellate process. 20 years ago, in United States v. Shurikuri, this court established the rule that when two specifications are found to be multiplicious on appeal, the government may elect which one to keep. And only 2 years after Shurikuri, this court reexamined its holding in Shurikuri in United States v. Palegar. And the granted issue in Palegar was almost identical to the granted issue before this court today. And in Palegar, this court held that the service court did not err by permitting the government to elect which finding of guilty would be affirmed.
Hey, Major Shapiro? Shapiro?
Shapiro, Your Honor.
Shapiro,
yes.
Okay. What is the rationale at trial for alleging a sexual assault and alleging a maltreatment by a sexual assault?
Your Honor, this issue wasn't litigated.
I'm not criticizing because that's a prosecutorial discretion issue, but I'm curious about the rationale.
Yes, Your Honor. It's unclear what the rationale was because this wasn't litigated at trial. Appellant didn't raise the issue of multiplicity at trial. The government didn't raise it. The military judge didn't raise the issue. And appellant
your
didn't.
Your vast experience as a seasoned advocate, what would you say would be the rationale, if there is one? I'm not asking you to testify or anything, but I'm just curious.
Yes, Your Honor. It could have been charged for exigencies of proof. It could have been charged. You know, they wouldn't have known the forum at the time that they made the charging decision, so it's possible a panel could nullify itself by deciding this was more maltreatment than sexual assault. But again, Your Honor, it's unclear, and nobody caught this issue.
I understand. Thank you.
And as I said, the appellant didn't even raise this as an assignment of error to the Army Service Court in his original brief. And so at that point, you've had a half a dozen attorneys, to include an SJA and a military judge, look at these specifications, and nobody caught the issue. And it wasn't until the Army Service Court struck the language, pressured her into a relationship, that this issue really came to light. And so this is an area of the law where sometimes smart people can miss it. The rule that this court established is consistent with the Supreme Court's earlier precedent in both Ball and Rutledge. The remedy from Ball and Rutledge is that one of the two specifications must be vacated. In neither Ball nor Rutledge did the Supreme Court establish a bright-line rule to vacate the lesser-included offense elementally. And in fact, in Rutledge, it had the opportunity to do just that, because the Supreme Court found that conspiracy to distribute controlled substances was a lesser-included offense of conducting a continuing criminal enterprise, and yet the court didn't mandate that the lesser-included offense was dismissed, only that it was remanded to the district court, and that one of the two convictions needed to be vacated. And so this indicates that there is no bright-line rule that all the circuits must follow.
But in terms of Curry, did this court pull this approach, not the remedy, but the approach of having the government decide, did this court pull that out of thin air?
Your Honor, it's consistent with the guidelines set by the Supreme Court that simply one of the convictions must go.
But there it's the district court that decides, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Here, I mean, I believe in your brief you refer to the broad sentencing authority of the CCA. Where did, instead of relying on the CCA to determine sentence appropriateness, where did this court get the idea of we're going to have this power rest with the government rather than with the CCA, particularly in light of the fact that in the federal courts it rests with the district court judge?
Your Honor, the government doesn't believe that Cherukuri, Frelixban, and Palagar mandate the CCA to follow the government's election. I think in our brief on page 12, we mentioned that we're not saying this is the exclusive remedy. It's just an approved method. So they may allow the government to make an election, but they don't have to. And that ensures that the CCA still have their broad authority under Article 66 to quite simply do justice. And, Your Honor, the government's confident that if we requested something that was patently unreasonable, the CCA would step in and do justice.
So is that consistent with the point Senior Judge Efron was making earlier with defense counsel about the approach taken here?
I believe so, Your Honor. And whether it's that they may allow the government to elect or whether they must allow the government to elect, the result as it pertains to the granted issue is still the same, that the Army Court of Criminal Appeals did not err by availing itself of the remedy that this court gave us in Palagar. In short, only one of the convictions needs to be vacated in order to vindicate appellant's right against double jeopardy. The Army Court vindicated that right and did not err by doing so. Moving to stare decisis, appellant has not met his substantial burden of persuasion under stare decisis to demonstrate why this court should overturn its longstanding precedent. As noted in Andrews, this court will not overturn longstanding precedent unless the most cogent reasons and inescapable logic require it. So looking at the Andrews factors, we believe that this is a workable solution because it's simply a choice between option A and option B. And as I mentioned, the CCAs do not have to take the government's election if the government's election results in an injustice. They've used this rule without issue for 20 years. And there are different governmental interests in keeping one conviction versus another, and the government appellate divisions have to be able to represent those interests at the appellate level. Cherukuri is also well-reasoned because it provides a rule that gives appellant the remedy that the Supreme Court mandated in both Ball and Rutledge, and that's not to be convicted of multiplicious specifications. Regarding intervening events, appellant's wrong when he says that Jones, Fosler, and Ellis-Puru have changed the legal landscape regarding lesser-included offenses. Teeters adopted the elements test from Blockberger in 1993, which was 7 years before Cherukuri was decided. As this court recently said just last year in Coleman, for more than a quarter century, we've used the Blockberger test to determine whether specifications are multiplicious. The law has not changed. And regarding Ellis-Puru, it's a case about charging for exigencies of proof. At no point did the court actually find that one specification was a lesser-included offense of another. Regarding reasonable expectations of service members, this court noted in Quick that it can be difficult to quantify the expectations of service members. However, Cherukuri, Frelichspan, and Palagar have been a fixture of the military justice system for 20 years. The government and the Army Court of Criminal Appeals relied on Cherukuri. Additionally, a service member who's sexually assaulted expects that her assailant will remain convicted of a sexual assault that's found to be legally and factually sufficient. Overturning this conviction based on a procedural rule not in existence at the time of appellant's trial would undermine that victim's confidence in the law. Regarding the risk of undermining public confidence in the law, the remedy appellant proposes would grant him a sentencing windfall. But it would eliminate the most serious offense on the charge sheet, the sexual assault, carrying with it a 30-year maximum punishment. The military has a unique interest in prosecuting sexual assaults, and dismissing a sexual assault on what would amount to a procedural technicality would undermine public confidence in the law. Andrews also noted that overturning confidence requires a special justification, and appellant has not cited any such justification. The government can conceive of none. Finally, Your Honor, the rule in Cherukuri makes sense. It allows the government to provide input throughout the appellate process. And the rule in Cherukuri ensures that there's no chilling effect at the trial level against prosecutors who may have a legitimate reason to charge for exigencies of proof and bring charges under either Article 133 or 93, but they may hesitate to use those articles out of concern that after they prevail at trial, they will lose the most serious conviction on appeal based on a technicality. Finally, as the Seventh Circuit noted in Peel, it would be paradoxical to give the defendant a shorter sentence than he would have received had the government not also charged him with a less serious offense. In this case, it would be a grave injustice for the victim of sexual assault to see her assailant's conviction overturned on a procedural rule not in effect at the time of the offense.
Hey, Major Shapiro.
Yes, Your Honor.
In your review of federal circuit court cases for this case, did you come across any offenses or cases where, in a civilian context, you had this odd situation that the military kind of comes up against from time to time where the included offense is a arguably more serious offense than the one that's the so-called greater offense?
Yes, Your Honor. In the United States v. Peel, it's a Seventh Circuit case from 2010. The court, the appellant was convicted of bankruptcy fraud and obstruction of justice committed in a bankruptcy fraud proceeding. Mm. And the court found that the obstruction of justice was a lesser included offense of bankruptcy fraud, but it still dismissed the bankruptcy fraud spec because of the reasoning that I just mentioned from the court that it would be paradoxical and certainly weird to give the appellant a lesser sentence than had he not also been charged with the less serious offense.
Mm-hmm. So, counsel, just for the sake of argument, let's say this court were to rule in the government's favor. How would we, in our opinion, address the sentence that appears in Cherukuri, quote, dismissal of the lesser included offense is required by the Supreme Court?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that to the extent that that sentence created any kind of confusion, the court's holding in Cherukuri, where they remanded it to the service court to allow the government to make an election should have cleared that up, and then this court's examination of Cherukuri in United States v. Palagar 2 years later, where it explicitly examined whether the government may make an election and holding that it's not error for the government to make an election. I think that should clear it up. Additionally, if we look at both Ball and Rutledge, they never actually mandate that, Your Honor.
So when you say it clears it up, was this a drafting error in the government's view on the part of this court?
Your Honor, I'm not going to speculate on how that sentence got in there, but rather that, as I said, I think the court cleared it up in its holding and that it should no longer be confusing, particularly after Palagar.
Is the government's argument basically, leaving Cherukuri as a matter of policy, the government screwed up charging this case? You said, well, smart people can miss stuff, and smart people missed stuff. The government screwed up in charging this case. Now the government says, oops, we screwed up, but let us fix it. If we're talking equity, is that equitable?
Your Honor, as I said, this is
the government letting the government clean up its mess.
Well, Your Honor, the mess to be cleaned up is the conviction for a multiplicious offense.
And right.
So the appellant before this stood convicted of two offenses, and now he's only convicted of one.
Mm-hmm.
So the mess is cleaned up because appellant no longer...
Well, the mess is cleaned up in the sense that one of them goes away. But what I'm saying is this is the government made the mess, and the government is now saying, oh, yeah, but we get to clean it up our way.
And, Your Honor, that would assume that there is a kind of mechanical solution later where normally we would automatically dismiss
well,
it.
I think the appellant is arguing for a mechanical solution. That's the elements test.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's not the current remedy that this court has.
Right.
And to the extent... Oh, yes, sir, I'm sorry.
No, okay. Go ahead.
And to the extent that there is a pattern among the federal courts in the circuits, it's that the offense with the higher maximum punishment is normally the one that stands. Although, I think there's a quote in our brief that there's no iron law that the offense with the highest maximum punishment...
Well, yeah, it's your position that the Supreme Court simply requires one or the other to go away.
Yes, Your Honor. That's all that's required, and the remedy this court fashioned in Cherukuri is within those guidelines.
Right.
Pending your questions, this court should affirm the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
No rebuttal?
No rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay. Then the court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. And we are in recess until 10:45.